Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Dr. Michael Paley, who received his MD and PhD in immunology from the University of Pennsylvania and completed his medicine residency and rheumatology fellowship at Barnes Jewish Hospital, Washington University, St. Louis. Dr. Paley has a specific clinical interest in ocular manifestations of systemic rheumatologic diseases. He is the director of Ocular Rheumatology Clinic at Washington University in St. Louis, which collaborates with the Department of Ophthalmology to care for patients with uveitis, scleritis, and orbital inflammation. His research interest is on HLA-B27 and how it causes both anterior uveitis and axial spondyloarthritis. He was recently part of a multidisciplinary international collaboration that identified disease-causing T cells that were shared across patients and organs, both eye and joint, for uveitis and spondyloarthritis. His lab is focused on better understanding where these disease-causing T cells come from and what they can do to develop better diagnostics and therapeutics for patients with axial spondyloarthritis. Dr. Paley, welcome to SpondyCast on this exciting day to talk about.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. So tell us a little bit. First, I'll point out that you are, for those that follow spondylitis, you are our 2023 Early Career Investigator Awardee.
And I was very honored.
Yeah, we're thrilled that you're working on advancing things in spondylitis because goodness knows we need it. So we have high hopes for you. Let's talk a little bit about you and where you started in medicine and what drew you specifically to your area of expertise.
So I ended up where I am in my career through very roundabout ways. So I ended up in rheumatology because it was sort of an unconscious bias that I realized sort of through my intern year. So what happens is like when you do a medicine residency, you have to collect like interesting case reports to present to other fellow residents. And I had come into residency thinking I was going to do pulmonary medicine and autoimmune diseases that attack the lung because I was an immunologist by training. And at the end of my first year of residency, I looked back at all the interesting cases that I had saved, and they were all rheumatology cases. And so an eye-opening moment that I discovered maybe actually rheumatology should have been my future and not pulmonary medicine.
That's fascinating. So what drew you specifically to getting into the eyes? Were you already becoming an ophthalmologist at that point?
No. So again, very roundabout in some ways, at least in terms of my eventual arriving at HLA-B27. So I was nearing the end of my medicine residency and into my rheumatology fellowship. And I was meeting with my postdoctoral mentor, Wayne Yokoyama. And he and I were talking about what we should do for my postdoc. And we really wanted to go into the tissue where the inflammation is, because a lot of good stuff had been done in the blood. But I think we really wanted to understand what was happening in the disease tissue, like what's going on at the inflamed site. And we had bouncing off a bunch of different diseases in rheumatology, like rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis and so on. But my wife happened to be in ophthalmology residency. And so I was asking her if anybody had sampled the eye. And she said, oh, let me connect you to, you know, my colleagues, you know, the attendings and stuff like that do research. And then I brought that idea to Wayne, and he's like, perfect, let's study B27 uveitis. And I said, that's a great idea. So that's kind of how the whole project started, from like a couple conversations.
I love it. So as an ocular rheumatologist, your specialty is in treating eye conditions associated with spondyloarthritis and other rheumatic diseases as well.
Yeah, so almost every rheumatologic condition manifests in some patients in the eye. So like rheumatoid arthritis can give you scleritis, ankylovasculitis, and other forms of vasculitis can also give you scleritis. Other diseases that we commonly see, like psoriatic arthritis, can also give you uveitis, just like ankylosing spondylitis. So almost all rheumatologic conditions can manifest in the eye in some form or another, with a couple of rare exceptions like gout and stuff like that. So as an ocular rheumatologist, I actually still see a variety of different diseases.
So I recall a conversation, I'm going to take you just a tiny bit in the weeds.
Sure.
With Dr. Rosenbaum.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about many of what's found in the eye generally in rheumatic diseases is also like in the gut biome, and it's only found in people with those diseases, where it's like normal gut biome stuff, but it's found in the eye in people with various rheumatic diseases. Is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's yeah. So there's a clear, I think there's a strong connection between what goes on in the gut and what happens in the joint or the eye, particularly for ankylosing spondylitis and anterior uveitis. So I think the clearest case is reactive arthritis, which is a very similar phenomenon that happens in HLA-B27 positive individuals. You know, they have a bacterial infection, either a gastrointestinal infection, organisms like Shigella or Salmonella, or a genitourinary infection like Chlamydia. And then they get over the infection, but then a couple weeks later or so, they develop eye and joint inflammation. So it's long been thought that this inflammatory event that happens in the gut is this trigger for these patients to develop this disease.
Interesting. I can't wait to watch the gut biome stuff. Keep going. Okay, so you are officially the Spondylitis Association of America's 2023 Early Career Investigator Award winner, which means that everyone on the committee found your research very promising and wanted to help fund more of it. So I want to dive into research and what you're currently working on.
Great. I love talking about my stuff.
All right. So hit me and then we'll get in. I know you get into a lot of specificity with the disease around cell activity. Is that right?
Yeah. So I think the biggest question for 50 years has been like, why does HLA-B27 like lead to axial spondyloarthritis? They actually discovered the association with HLA-B27 and ankylosing spondylitis before they even knew what HLA-B27 did. So HLA-B27, like the role of B27 in the immune system was, and related molecules, was actually described like a year later in work that was eventually won the Nobel Prize. Yeah. But it's really fascinating because one of the original articles, when they were talking about reactive arthritis in 1973, they made a comment about whether or not B27 could promote disease through this, what's called molecular mimicry. So like it would mimic something bad in the body. And so the body thought that like it was attacking, it was getting rid of like a virus or a bacteria or some sort of like offending pathogen, when in fact it was actually attacking its own body. And so the immune system had gotten confused. And so even though they didn't know what it did, they had that concept was there in 1973, which I find amazing. Cause personally, I think our work really suggests that's one of the main ways that B27 causes disease.
Right. So specifically, as you are, so the question I got, and I'm even perplexed by this one, can we explore the idea of specific cells driving disease?
Yeah, I think so. So it took a while. So the role for HLA-B27, what it does in the immune system, is it shows off to the immune system what's going on inside the cell. So it takes pieces of all these different proteins that are inside the cell and puts it on the surface so your immune system can see it, right? Because if it's inside the cell, it's hidden. But if it's on the outside of the cell, the immune system can look at it. And there's tons of different HLAs, right? You have HLAs A, B, and C. You get one copy from each one of your parents. And there's, you know, 100 different variations of each of these different HLAs. But HLA B27 is somehow unique in its association with axial spondyloarthritis. So there was a long time this hypothesis that maybe it was showing off a unique piece of what's going on inside the cell that was unlike any other HLAs to the immune system. And the part of the immune system that recognizes that is a cell called the CD8 T cell. And so the hypothesis has been, like the thought, is that there is a unique CD8 T cell or set of CD8 T cells that recognize that shared piece that B27 is showing off inside the cell. And so that interaction was hypothesized to maybe drive the disease. And so if that's true, then there's a very shallow or, you know, small group of cells that actually recognize that antigen that could be, you know, the main triggers for developing the disease. So which you could imagine being translated into either diagnostics. If you have those cells, you're very likely to develop the disease, or therapeutics, maybe you could target those cells for deletion and maybe improve somebody's disease or maybe cure them.
Thank you for that. I'm looking perplexed. Nobody can respond, but I'm looking perplexed, and it doesn't happen often on SpondyCast. I'm trying to think of like an analogy of what that is. This is one of the things that I get, and I think a lot of us do, is the immune system is fairly, maybe for not everybody, but it's complicated. So when you talk about it being recognized, HLA mm-hmm. 27 being recognized, is that what creates the disease and the process?
So it is in some ways, yeah. So what happens is that, all right, I don't have a good analogy for this at the moment, but your immune system, when you're born, you don't know what virus or bacteria you're gonna encounter.
Right.
Over the course of your lifespan, right? You have no idea, because you could be born in any country at any time. And there's lots of germs floating around that are different depending on where you are in life and geography. But so what your immune system does is basically generate trillions of different cells that all can recognize different piece of the microbial universe that's out there. And so when you're exposed to whatever it is you're going to be exposed to, that small slice of your immune system that can recognize it becomes activated and says, oh, now we're in charge of getting rid of this bacteria or virus. And they take over and they get rid of it. So that means that for any different given slice, there's like a select group of cells that drive it. And when they see their antigen, right, that HLA B27 is kind of like a waiter, right? It shows you like, or, you know, a server, it's going to show you what it's going to feed it, right? Yeah. The T cells like see that, and that's what they respond to.
Gotcha. Right? So and it's like when they come out with the steak tray.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That makes perfect sense now. Okay. So we practically speaking for patients, how can your work help with better treatments and earlier, more accurate diagnosis?
Yeah. So we think that if you can find these cells. So let me back up for a second. So the way we found these cells actually is that we went into the eyes with people with B27 positive uveitis. And we had colleagues that went into the joints in patients with B27 positive ankylosing spondylitis. And we found out that these cells had very high concentrations, were really like enriched in the tissues that were inflamed compared to the blood by like 10 or 100 fold, right? So they were entering the eyes and the joints very specifically during periods of inflammation. And that kind of like helped, and this is in different patients in different continents, right? In different tissues. And we're finding the exact same cell, which really, I think, convinced us that we were on the right path, that these are cells that are really causing the disease. they're hard to find in the blood, but I think if we were able to develop a platform that could detect them, I think the data in the literature and the historical record suggests that maybe we could start distinguishing people who truly have disease from patients that don't, or maybe have a different form of the disease. Because, you know, you can imagine like, oh, you can have a group of people in like, in the healthy group, like maybe 10% of less of people will develop these cells. Whereas like in the patient group, there would be 60 or 70% of patients would have these cells. And so you could say like, oh, your doctor would be like, oh, I think you might have this disease. Let me like draw a quick blood sample, send it to the lab. And then like a couple days later, you like have a result that says, oh, you really have, you know, axial spondyloarthritis. Now, it's not a big problem for people who, you know, diagnosis is so obvious, right? Like you get an x-ray of their SI joints and they have sacroiliitis. Like as a clinician, you don't need like HLA-B27
right.
or anything else. But there are people that we as physicians are uncertain of like whether or not they truly have disease. Like they're on the edge. And so like these, it could be really helpful, you know, as a tool for these clinicians to help push them to say, oh, you really do have something. We're going to start monitoring you and giving you therapy and that sort of thing, versus being able to say, no, you probably don't. Your symptoms may be from something else. And so you can provide a lot of reassurance that they're not going to have a lot of downstream side effects or worry, you know, that something bad is going to happen to them.
Right.
From autoimmune disease.
No, and that's interesting because one of the biggest things we hear about is the underdiagnosis historically of women and people of color, right?
Yeah.
And to have something concrete in your toolbox to diagnose would be helpful. I know there are many, 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 I don't know how many zeros I want to put on that many, but patients that were often ended up diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis and were told for a long time that like, just because they didn't have HLA-B27, it wasn't a thing. And
yeah,
this can eliminate some of that. And I think speed time to diagnosis maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it would definitely help with the B27 positive population. I think, you know, whenever I give talks and stuff, everybody's asking me about the B27 negative group. And I think what we're trying to do is figure out how it works in people that do have HLA-B27 and try to build a framework to understand sort of spondyloarthritis in general, and then use that to then start mapping out what goes on in the B27 negative
group. Gotcha. Yeah.
So I do want to address the B27 negative group, but I think it's going to take a little bit more time since the genetics are not as clear yet, I think, for those people.
Yeah. Okay. And we talked in the green room about a new therapy that was recently came out of Russia, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, so they started down this line many years ago. So this is just a single case, like one patient. So you got to take all of this with a grain of salt because it's just an N of one person. But there's this company developing this drug, this therapy, an antibody that specifically targets these cells for destruction. And so if you think that these cells are really the main drivers of disease, if you target for them destruction, people can like get a lot better. And the difference for that type of therapy compared to all our other therapies is that by comparison, you know, the biologics that we use, like the TNF-alpha inhibitors or the IL-17 inhibitors or the JAK inhibitors that are available, they just kind of broadly target the immune system and just like turn everything down a little bit so that your symptoms get better. This theoretically wouldn't do that. This specifically would take out maybe 5 to 10% of your T cells. So you would lose them. And that would contain the cells that drive disease. But it would leave untouched 90%+ of your T cells. And so like there's enough redundancy in the system that theoretically you wouldn't have major holes in your immune cells, like as in your immune population. So you'd be able to fight off viruses and bacteria and cancer and all that stuff just as you normally would without that like 5% of cells. And so theoretically, this hasn't been demonstrated, but theoretically, right, this would be a therapy that would not be considered immunosuppressive or not greatly immunosuppressive. But at the same time, theoretically, again, because it's only been done on one patient, it could be just as effective as a TNF inhibitor or an IL-17 inhibitor. And so I think the field is pretty excited about that possibility, because it was highlighted in our national meeting, the ACR. They do a year in review of clinical papers, and they generally publish like all the big phase 3 studies that have like placebo controlled, randomized, double blind studies. And then nestled in those series of papers was like this one single case report, like this one patient, which I thought was super exciting that the general rheumatology field was interested in how maybe this could be the concept of moving forward, where we take a disease, we identify the cells that cause the disease, and then we develop a therapy that can target those cells and make patients better without a lot of this immunosuppression that is really effective right now, but I think we could do better in terms of balancing benefits and risks, obviously.
So it's a little bit like a chemo for...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's very similar in that way, but it's not as toxic as people would think of like chemotherapy, right? It's not going to like make you nauseous or give you diarrhea or like lose your hair or like all that stuff, because it's very selective.
And thanks for that distinction, because I was just thinking of like literally targeting and killing the cells, not the side effects next to it.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like watching Asteroids on like an Atari game. That's kind of how I think of the immune system, though.
Yeah.
Often when people talk about like immune cells, I envision my Atari or Commodore 64 Asteroids game and like we're killing them. Maybe that's not what anyone else thinks.
But I should caution your listeners in the sense that, like, I mean, this was just in one patient.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a phase 2 study right now coming out of Russia, and I think one other Eastern country that this company is doing it in. So it's kind of a long way off, and we don't even know how the data is going to pan out. And this case was a little bit, I think this guy was unique. The gentleman that they reported, he got diagnosed in like 1983. You know, he had longstanding disease because he was on just like NSAIDs for 20 years. And then he finally got like on a TNF alpha inhibitor. And then about 5 years in or so, they did a bone marrow transplant on this guy where they took his own cells out. They like destroyed his immune system and placed it with his own stem cells to like repopulate and kind of tried to do a like an immunologic reset. And so that's not standard of care. Like nobody does that, but they tried that on him and it actually improved his disease for like 2 years. And then his disease came back. So it worked, but not permanently. And then he was back on the TNF inhibitors for many, many years. And then they started this therapy and then 4 years, they started this therapy and he's been on it for about 4 years based on the case report. And he's able to come off the TNF inhibitors, right? It's totally controlled his disease. But he may be a special case because for a variety of reasons. One is like he got this bone marrow transplant. Like nobody else is getting this. And we do not know the effects that had on the patients, on him. And so... and whether or not that makes the drug that he got either more or less effective. So I don't know. But the cool thing was they were able to track the cells that caused the disease in his blood over time. And when they started the depletion therapy, they saw that they went away like very effectively. So.
Whoa, that's interesting though. I mean, doesn't all research just start with a question and like, how do we get a little further down the road?
Yeah. I mean, this case has generated a lot of excitement, at least here at WashU, I hope. And then, you know, some of my friends that I messaged about this paper.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so what, any other interesting things you're working on or?
I mean, the things that we're interested in now, I think, are in a couple steps. So one is, like, let's say these, you know, cells cause disease, right? One of the things we're interested in is, like, where do we come from? We think they actually come from the gut, and are collecting data to suggest that, kind of like reactive arthritis that we were talking at the top, where you have a inflammatory process, an infection in the gut, and then a couple weeks later or whatever, you get inflammation in your eye or your joint. We think these cells are one of the key pieces, or the key piece, that takes that inflammation from the gut and traffics it to the rest of the body. And then we're also interested in kind of leveraging that, like we were talking about, to better diagnose people, right? So if we can find these cells in the blood in a reproducible, robust way, we can maybe start thinking about developing a diagnostic test, right, that can help clinicians, like, accelerate time to diagnosis. Because most people, you know, it's the average time to diagnosis from symptom onset is like 8 years or something like that, which is insane. And it's worse, obviously, for, like, underrepresented minorities or women, because their symptoms may not be the same, or they might not, more, they're less likely to develop, like, damage on x-rays or something like that.
Right.
So I mean, I think that would be really exciting to be able to help clinicians that way.
Oh, 100%. I think it's, when you add up all the years times all the people of the frustration, and I mean, it's right. It's millions of people,
yeah,
multiple years. And if we can close that gap, it makes it so much better, like, in quality of life. And some days I even think it makes it, you know, just like, there's so many places it can help. What do you think is going to be the next big thing in the next 10 years in spondylitis?
I think it's going to be new diagnostics and drugs that are going to target this interaction or target these cells. And I think actually spondyloarthritis might pave the way for the entire field of rheumatology in targeting disease-causing cells. I mean, because we, you know, like, I think about my colleagues in oncology, right? So they have lots of tools now where they get a tissue biopsy of a mass or something like that, and then they, you know, they get a diagnosis of what tissue it came from, but then they run all this genetic testing on the tumor to see, like, oh, maybe this drug will work better or that drug will work better. And they're a lot more targeted in some of their therapies for some of their diseases. And I've always been very jealous of that, and wanted to do that in the clinic for our patients, to be able to say, like, oh, I want to draw your blood and I want to find out what are the cells in your immune system that are causing the inflammation in your joint or in your eye or in your lungs. And then I want to be able to have therapies that target those cells to make you better. And I think I'm overly optimistic sometimes, but I'm hopeful that some of the stuff that we're doing is going to provide that framework for spondylitis. And then that might one day maybe even be a framework for rheumatology in general, for, like, rheumatoid arthritis and vasculitis and all those other diseases that we need to target. Yeah.
That's a big, we hope you get there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got a dream, right?
Right. It all starts there, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't try to manifest it, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
So do you think, and this is maybe controversial, do you think there might be a cure in your lifetime?
So maybe. I think we would need to know a lot more. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think what you be able to get is a therapy that doesn't suppress your immune system, that gets rid of the disease-causing cells. But since, you know, you have, so let's go back to that case report. Like, that guy got a bone marrow transplant. So he got an entire, like, reset button hit, you know, for his immune system with the bone marrow transplant. And that worked for like 2 years. And then his disease came back. So the things that like were there to, for him to develop disease, stay, those risk factors like stay with him. And so he kind of developed disease again. And so I think, you got to treat the immune cells that are causing disease, but then we also got to figure out like, what are the risk factors that are causing, would be causing the disease to come back in that kind of patient, and figure out if you can do both of those, then I think you're talking about a cure. But I think you got to like, you got to hit two things, right? You got to get rid of the cells that are causing disease and then get rid of the risk factors to develop disease again. If that makes sense.
You could develop a, like a causality model around it.
Yeah.
Once you get the, okay. Perfect sense. Let's do it. All right. So what did we miss? Anything more exciting there at WashU? Go Bears, by the way, right? You're Bears.
That's right. We are the Bears. I would say that, we have a lot of stuff in the works, in the pipeline for expanding our spondyloarthritis footprint. So none of it, unfortunately, is ready for prime time, but I'm very optimistic in the next, you know, 3-6 months or something like that, we're going to be launching new clinical ventures to like have specific, you know, specialty clinics and stuff like that to really help patients with axial spondyloarthritis, or I'm hopeful that we'll be able to have new opportunities for patients to deliver better care. And it's going to synergize with the research that we're doing. So we have a combination of clinical experts and research experts that will, I think, really elevate WashU to, you know, in the spondyloarthritis world. Because we were not part of some of the larger studies run by like Spartan and stuff like that. And I hope that, you know, this will be a nidus to maybe start changing some of that, but we shall see.
All right. Will you come back and visit us when you have more news?
Oh yeah. I would love to.
Awesome. All right. Well, keep us posted. Thank you for coming. And this has been great. I'm excited for everything you're doing. And I'm hoping that some of that ECI dollars catapults you to the next level, and that we get to keep reading more research requests from you guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Those I'm very grateful for the support of all of our sponsors, particularly the SAA and the ECI award. We are putting it to very good use, hopefully for the benefit of patients.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Get back to it. And we will, we look forward to having you on again soon.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.